Hi everyone, my name is Marie and I'm a co-owner of VampireAcademy.org. I'm rereading Vampire Academy right now, and that's partly because I'm part of a reread challenge that VampireBookClub.net is arranging, and also partly because I thought it was a good idea to reread the books anyway. I originally read them in April, and then when I read them, I read all the four books that had come out then in less than a week, and that's really fast for me. So because I read them so quickly, and because it's been a while since April, of course there are things I've forgotten or missed, so I really wanted to reread all of them before reading Last Sacrifice, so that would it was all fresh in my mind. And you know, Richelle drops a lot of hints in the earlier books, so I wanted to be sure that I didn't miss any clues to what was going to happen in the final book. I wanted to say a little bit about Vampire Book Club. It's a blog, vampirebookclub.net, and they are the ones hosting this reread challenge, which made me even more excited about rereading the books. They have prizes. If you've signed up for the reread challenge, you're eligible if you review some of the books in the end. But I also think it's fun to read a book together with a bunch of other people and get their opinions, and do it all at the same time. Also, by the way, Vampire Book Club is really worth a visit if you're interested in books and reading. They talk about all kinds of books in the urban fantasy or paranormal romance, those kind of genres, young adults also, of course, because Vampire Academy is young adult. It's not just vampire books, they have contests, reviews and interviews and all kinds of fun things. Anyway, I'm now rereading Vampire Academy, and a lot of things are going through my mind. First, it makes me remember what I was thinking when I first read the books, and also I feel I'm viewing a lot of things with different eyes now that I know what's going to happen in the later books. So I thought it would be fun to share some of my feelings as I reread the books, and remember that this means that there will be spoilers in these podcasts. I'm going to talk absolutely freely about the books, draw parallels perhaps between different things, and see if things can be foreshadowed and those kind of things. And so I'll probably talk a lot about things that happen in later books. So if you haven't read all the books, maybe you shouldn't listen to the podcasts, just as a warning. Like I said, Richelle has an ability to hint about things long before they actually happen. And I think it's going to be really interesting as I reread the books to see how many of these hints I'll pick up now that I've read the latter books. I'm really looking forward to that, especially since, like I said, I read the books so quickly, and of course I remember a lot of things, but not the little details. I'll probably do these podcasts a couple of chapters at a time, because my head gets filled with so many thoughts that it's difficult to talk about the whole book in one podcast. It muddles my mind a bit, and also that podcast would be really long, because I tend to talk. So I'll start just with the first few chapters. So anyway, here are my thoughts about probably the first three chapters or so. The very first thought that struck me when I started reading Vampire Academy was that it's written in the first person. When I read it the first time, I didn't really react to this because I'd read quite a few books right before reading this book, and they were all written in first person. But since I first read the books, I've read a lot of other books, and most of those were written in the third person. So now, going back to Vampire Academy and reading in the first person, it all of a sudden seemed weirder, and it felt much more intimate. I'd forgotten how close we get to Rose because we get to read her thoughts all the time. When I talk about Rose, when I talk about the books, of course I always talk about her in third person, and I've been doing that for like half a year now. But all of a sudden, it felt like I was inside her head again, and it took a while to get used to that again. It was also very interesting to remember my first impression of Dimitri. My friend who recommended Vampire Academy to me had been really good at not giving away any spoilers, so I knew almost nothing about the books, and I had no idea who Dimitri was, and I really didn't foresee him being a love interest when we first see him in the books. I think Richelle is really good at making us confused in the beginning. We are inside Rose's head, so we trust what she's saying, so we know that Dimitri is the enemy, but we don't know why. Rose is very suspicious about everyone, so I really didn't know who to trust at first. And Dimitri, especially since he's so quiet, and we don't know what he's thinking, so I didn't trust him. And then when he says that he has noticed that Lisa and Rose have a bond, we realize that there is something really special about him. He's very observant, he sees things. No one else had noticed, but his being quiet obviously means that he's always watching what happens around him. And that I found that very, very telling when I first read that. And I also wanted to say about the confusion in the beginning. I know a couple of people that I've encouraged to read the books, and I've had to explain things to or tell them to continue reading because they get confused in the beginning. Rochelle doesn't explain all the general concepts until later, and she does it in small bits, so you have to deduce by yourself some things before you get a more detailed explanation later. And for some people, this makes the book difficult to get into. I mean, I was also confused in the beginning with the concepts of Dampier, Moroi, and Strigoi, for example, but I also understood that that was the point. There is a mystery about why Rose and Lisa ran away, something they don't even like to think about between themselves, which means that we know very little about it despite being in Rose's head. We as readers are supposed to be kept in the dark for as long as possible, as well as the people around Rose and Lisa. When it comes to Dimitri as a love interest, I guess I should have guessed after rereading chapter 2, especially the beginning, when Rose talks about how smart Dimitri is. In retrospect, I feel that it was more obvious now that there is an attraction to Dimitri right from the beginning. I actually don't remember when I first saw him as a love interest when I read the book initially. Of course, I realized when Rose begins to have feelings for him when she says that herself, but I'm not sure when I actually realized it, because as things often are, we realize things before Rose does. Sometimes things just hit her all of a sudden, and often we have realized it before she does. And of course, she does call him hot right from the beginning, so we know she finds him attractive. That's how she describes him right away. It's also very interesting to see the other characters introduced by Rose in the beginning of the book, now that we know what happens to all of them later in the series. Mia, for example, is someone that I really disliked in the beginning, but now she's one of my favorite characters in the series. I really love her. And of course, it's bittersweet to meet Mason again when we know what happens to him. I love how he accepts Rose right away, no awkwardness at all. And she's been gone for 2 years. That's really amazing. And it was so cool to hear Eddie being introduced as one of the boys teasing Rose. I'd totally forgotten that they were friends right from the beginning. I just thought they had become friends with all they'd been through in the books. I really didn't remember Eddie from the beginning of the books. What struck me right away about Aaron when he was introduced was, first, where is he in the later books? I can't remember hearing much about him after Mia and him break up. And what's his last name? Rose introduces everyone else almost with their first and last name, but not Aaron. Which family does he belong to? I can't remember. I don't think it's ever mentioned, and I can't think of why. I'm going to have to think about if that has any significance, because it feels like it should have. Anyway, what struck me most of all, though, when reading the first couple of chapters, were all this talk about guardian's duty. And this is, of course, something that comes up time and time again, and a discussion about how far that duty will go, how much of your life are you supposed to, or are you expected to give up to serve the Moroi. It's their tradition, and it's been their tradition for so long, so it's just a natural order for them. But when you don't live in their world and you read about it, it sounds very strange. And I thought it sounded even more strange when rereading, since I know how Lissa's and Rose's relationship has changed with time, and the discussion of lowering the graduation age for guardians, etc. And for example, Kirova, she is a Moroi, so her talking to Rose about Rose's duty, it feels very strange, because Rose is serving them. But instead of being grateful, they demand full devotion to the Moroi from the Dampir. I mean, it would be one thing for Alberta to talk about her duty, Rose's duty to the Moroi, because that's also Alberta's life. But for Kirova to talk to Rose about what her duty is, it just makes it seem even more wrong. I know they're depending on Moroi for their offspring, but it's a lot to basically give up your free will and basically your life. And now, in the beginning of the books, Rose is still in that mindset that her role in life is to protect Lissa. She doesn't really think about what this will mean for her future life, and she gives up any chances of deciding about her own life. And in later books, of course, when they start talking about college classes. Rose, of course, realizes that she won't be able to go to college unless maybe she takes the same classes as Lissa, since she's always going to have to be watching Lissa. And this doesn't occur to her now. She's just thinking about the tradition of the guardian's duties, and it's still very important to her. Of course, it's important to her in the future books as well, but it's she realizes that it has to be more of a balance between the two. I personally think this is going to play a big part, either in Last Sacrifice or in the spin-off series, because Rochelle has talked a lot about what the Moroi really have the right to demand from the Dampirs. If it's really, really right to have that kind of servitude from them, and it's starting to get questioned. Things are starting to happen. Moroi are taking more responsibility for their own lives and their own protection, and it's been more talk about everything being a collaboration, and I think that's going to play a big part in future books. Well, I think that's enough for now. I've talked for quite a long time already, and I'm only a few chapters into the first book. So I think I'll stop there and continue in the next podcast and talk more about the books then. Hope you enjoy listening, and have a nice day. Bye.